welcome to the first episode of our Bond retrospective podcast, which we don't have a name yet. I'm Jake.
I'm Troy. And we have spent weeks debating making this podcast. This has been a dream long in the making for both me and Jake ever since we were wee lads. And we still don't have a name.
No, we're hoping to come up with something like in the middle of this. We have options, but that is just how prepared we are for this first episode, if you will, of this this podcast, where we'll go back very first Bond thing. Not Dr. No, but the climax episode of Casino Royale, the before times. But before we get into that, let's get into, actually first, I'm going to grab my Vesper. I felt like, because this is the first episode, need to have an inaugural Vesper martini. I don't think I properly shook this, but...
Did you stir it?
It probably got stirred, so Sean Connery's going to find me in my sleep and then, I don't know, like... hit my mom or something. I don't know.
What's in a Vesper martini, if you're allowed to tell?
Well, according to Ian Fleming, it is 3 measures of Gordon's, 1 of vodka, 1/2 measure of quinoa lillet, and shake it over ice until it's ice cold, and add a thin slice of lemon peel.
Oh.
I don't. The quinoa lillet doesn't exist anymore. So the alternative is that they use a booze called Italiano Americano or something like that. But I used a Lillet Blanc, which also works, which apparently has more of a fruity taste in comparison. Anyway,
I made a root beer from a nondescript soda can, since we don't have sponsors at this point. And there's a straw to protect my teeth. And I shake it with the ice inside to keep it cold so I'm not tasting warm soda. So really, it's more British, I feel, to have warm soda. But we're not talking about the British James Bond today, so...
But before we get into that, let's talk about our history with the character James Bond. I guess I'll start. Like when I was a kid, the very first Bond thing that I was exposed to, like I'd heard about the Pierce Brosnan movies, but then like, my dad was just like, "Hey, you need to watch this movie with Sean Connery. It's James Bond." And it was Thunderball. My very first exposure to Thunderball was the intro. So it's a funeral and it says JB, like James Bond is in the casket, but then it zooms up. And it's James Bond, and he looks nothing like Pierce Brosnan. I was totally confused. What the fuck is going on? But he's looking at this widow, and he's just like, "Well, at least this guy that killed my colleagues is dead." And then he goes over to the widow's house, and the widow comes into her room and sees James Bond there. And I'm just like, "What's going on?" My four or five-year-old brain's like, "What's going on?" And he goes like, "Madam, I've come to offer my sincere condolences." Boom! Punches the woman. I'm like, what is happening? What the fuck is this fucking crazy movie? Turns out that the widow is a man, and they fight, and he kills him. And then his guards break in. Bond runs to the roof and gets in a fucking jetpack. Jetpacks out of the roof. Lands on the ground, puts a jetpack in the car, and then oil slicks, and then Tom Jones blazes. And I'm just like, I was hooked immediately. And then after that experience, my grandpa got wind that I was into James Bond. So basically my dad, combination of my dad and my grandpa, like just totally like feeding into my obsession with James Bond. And so my grandpa would just like give me a bunch of James Bond crap. He gave me the original books and he signed it. If I can put this down, there's so many wires and shit, I don't want to break anything. But he signed it, making it seem like James Bond signed it for me. So that was pretty dope. James Bond has just been like a weird part of my upbringing, like with just a way to bond with my grandpa and my dad. And my mom like also kind of bought into it, and I would watch all the movies on Spike TV every, it was either Christmas or Thanksgiving they would be on like every year, but always watched that. Got the VHSs and the DVDs and the Blu-rays. And yeah. And Troy, what is your experience with James Bond?
Well, my grandpa never claimed to be friends of James Bond. As we all know, James Bond was my father until he took me to a carnival and I got lost. And then he saw me with the police officers who had found me, and he realized I was happier with them. So he let me go into foster care. And years later, after I had gained the superpowers of the wizard Shazam, I tracked down James Bond, who lived the block over from my foster home, and he didn't want me. So I moved on with my life. No, that's a different movie. It's for legal reasons.
Why, Troy, it's almost like you don't like Shazam.
That's a different podcast on the why, what's going on, help me episode of my cinematic journey. I'm looking forward to the sequel of Shazam, though. But that's a different franchise. James Bond and I are a bit more emotionally distant for other reasons in my life. As a kid, I was really into history. When I wanted to bond with my grandpa, I would talk about the Alamo or Davy Crockett or stuff like that. So when I started getting into adventure fiction, I kind of found myself drifting more towards Star Wars and DC and Marvel comic books, where there was a sense of history. So whenever I saw James Bond, I think Die Another Day was the first Bond movie I encountered like marketing material for.
That was actually the first Bond I ever saw in theaters.
It's like we're the same age, Jake.
I know, isn't that crazy? But I remember when, I remember World's Not Enough, like the posters for that when I was younger too.
Yeah. Yeah, so I saw this film series that just kind of did the same thing over and over again and had no continuity. So I was like, I don't know if I need to get into that.
Hey, there is continuity, just very loose. It's like
until you hit like Batman Begins, and then they're like over continuity from what I've heard, right?
Yeah, dude. Once we get to Franz Oberhauser, it's all connected. We'll get to Franz Oberhauser is Blofeld.
So I was like, and then I learned more about the politics of James Bond, and I'm like, oh no, he's terrible to women. That's not good. I don't like that. A big part of that was reading League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I love Alan Moore and I love League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. And the depiction of James Bond in that comic book, which is a comic book that takes place in all of fiction. So James Bond is the villain in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. He goes by Jimmy. Yeah, Jimmy Bond. He's an assassin. He hurts our main characters. He has no principles. Spoiler alert, Alan Moore literally has him being like a double agent for the Americans. And whenever he needs to kill a British asset, they just say he's fighting Dr. No because there's no doctor. So he's just a scumbag in those books. And when I read about Ian Fleming, I'm like, oh no, maybe that's the scumbag. So I always appreciated, like, Bond fascinated me because he was so big, but I never really watched the movies. I actually did a book report on an autobiography of Bond in high school where we had to illustrate a scene from the book, and I illustrated a passage where Bond was like a sniper shooting an enemy agent. And I'm like, this was my book report. This is James Bond. He's going to shoot an enemy agent. But finally, a couple years back, I finally started digging into the movies. And I've gotten up through Moonraker, and this podcast is just kind of my effort to try to understand with Jake, what is the appeal of Bond? What works about these strange films for fans and people?
Why do you like these like old movies of an outdated like an asshole man who shoots people? And it's ingrained in my childhood. Very much like Peter Pan is to you.
Peter Pan is also emotionally stunted with women and British. And his Q is a small blonde woman who sets up people.
And they never age. Unless you're Roger Moore.
Unless you're Roger Moore going to Timothy Dalton, because I think there is a reference in The Living Daylights that they're the same guy. So you're like, oh, you got younger.
Well, you got Robert Brown. Yeah, Robert Brown as a M still, who took over after Bernard Lee died. So we have an odd couple situation. Troy, I really love James Bond. Troy doesn't give a shit. So it'll be.
Most of the movies are fine. And as me and Jake have discussed, there's, I would say so far, I've seen five that rise above, fine, including one masterpiece. And the masterpiece may surprise you. I don't know.
But we'll get to that when we when we get there. I know which one it is. And I've seen that one a bunch of times, but we'll get into it later.
We will.
So that brings us to, what are we calling this again? what is the name of the podcast?
We wanted to call it For Your Ears Only, but then some velvety hacks apparently have already come up with that name. So we debated that listening
to... obvious one, too. I'm not surprised, but...
We debated that listening to this podcast would be like listening to the Beatles without earmuffs, which might be the most dated line of dialogue in any Bond movie. Well, okay, maybe not.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to those. Yeah, that is one of many, many dated Bond lines, but a funny one nevertheless, because it's Sean Connery. But before there was Connery, there was one man who was James Bond, or shall we say, the American agent.
God sends Jimmy Bond.
And that is Barry Nelson in 1954's episode of Climax, entitled Casino Royale, which condenses Ian Fleming's first book in the series to a 54-minute episode, and changes a lot of shit, and we're going to talk about it, and we'll figure out something to talk about, because it's kind of unremarkable. Troy, it was your...
Well, as we all know, beloved piece of early 50s television that Casino Royale is known as... It did start off from the beginning, as Jake said, it is the first book written by Ian Fleming. Ian Fleming, of course, being a man who, he was in the OSS in World War II.
Yeah, he was. He was like a naval, he was like a secretary officer, basically. He was basically in charge. One of his jobs was drafting plans for commandos to do in France and stuff. So he would come up with like batshit crazy things for these commandos to do. And apparently he like really wanted to be on the front lines like with these commandos, but he knew way too much information. So they never let him join the lines. So basically a lot of like the James Bond plotting was just come from his imagination, because he'd have to like think like did you ever hear the story where like he wanted to crack the Enigma code by his main plan was like, I don't know how this was supposed to work, but basically they would stage a German, like a crashed German plane in the middle of the ocean, and set out a distress call to a German U-boat, and they would have their agents dress up as German soldiers, and the German soldiers would just think that like the plane was down and that they would take them in. And then at some point, they would get into the U-boat, somehow crack the Enigma code, and then escape or something like that. And it got in the planning stages. They were thinking about, like, how the hell are we going to do this? Eventually, they were like, this is kind of batshit insane. Like, how are we going to fake, like, a German plane downing? And, like, how are we going to, like, it's too much of a risk. Oh, wait, no. I missed a part of it. They were supposed, like a German boat was supposed to come, and they would think that, like the mates were dead on the plane. And then another group of agents would come up, shoot the boat patrol, And they would get in the boat patrol, go to the main U-boat, and then they would somehow, like, crack the Enigma code or some shit like that. Like, it was insane. Anyway, I digress. They decided that that wasn't a particularly smart plan, but it's fun. And it wasn't that it was smart. It just wasn't, like, practical to do. Like, it would have been awesome if they pulled it off, but yeah. But after that, another funny thing about Casino Royale, he got the idea because he was in a casino, I forget where, I think he was in Lisbon or something. No, he was in, like, Lisbon in a casino or something, and he saw, like, this agent was like, oh, those are Nazi spies, and they were, like, killing at the Baccarat table. And then Ian Fleming had the brilliant idea that he was going to play them in Baccarat and make them lose all their money for the German activities. And, like, some bad shit would happen. But he ended up losing. So he was just like, well, damn it. But then he took that idea and he turned it into Casino Royale. And thus Bond was born. And thus now we get into the fucking... into a Casino Royale climax, I guess. Unless you have anything else to add about Ian Fleming, who, yeah.
He's a very interesting character. I haven't looked that deeply into him, but I know he worked with Roald Dahl in the OSS and Christopher Lee and all of these crazy people that we don't know about because it's still classified. And I think you said it before, he did a lot of desk work. So in some ways, he was more of a money penny than a James Bond. Like, it's more his fantasy of what the field work is. And I think it's so telling that the first Bond book is born out of being embarrassed at losing a card game to Nazis, because there definitely is this sense in the Bond books and the Bond mythos that proper manners and high British breeding will save the day and bring the empire, more so in the movies, because the books are more up and tumble, from what I understand.
Yeah, but I think you kind of get the sense of, like, I think, like, an early review of Casino Royale was just like, it's snobbery, sadism, and sex. And that's exactly what it is. It's basically very snobby, violent, like fun escapist, trashy fantasy spy adventures, and they're great in that way. Like, well, varying qualities. I haven't read all of them yet. Actually, I think the only one I've read is, like, Casino Royale and, like, a good chunk of Dr. No. And Casino Royale is very much like a straight up spy story, with not that much action, and it's but. It's a lot of dated things in those books. Just to put it very, very mildly. But interesting reads.
I still haven't read the books. I'm still scared of the books. I know the movies watered them down, and I'm frightened. It sounds, from the sounds of it, it sounds like Ian Fleming was to literature what Matthew Vaughn is to movies today.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around what that means. I don't even know.
Like, Kingsman is like proper breeding. Tut tut. Clean your suit.
Yeah, I guess.
Punch people. We saved the day.
I mean, there's definitely like a modern,
like, it's kind of interesting because with Kingsman, that idea is very upfront. But with Bond, yeah, it's the same idea undergirding it.
Wait, I think I lost you there, Troy. Hold on, we got technical difficulties. Hello? Troy? Troy?
We don't know if we'll leave this in or not on this episode of You Only Listen Twice, or whatever we end up calling it.
I'm sure it'll be in the title by the end of this, that you already know what the title is, but humor. Anyway, now on to our discussion of Casino Royale, the climax episode, starring Barry Nelson, Peter Lorre, and Linda Christian, hosted by William Lundigan. Troy, what did you think of...
Well, this is just such a... Casino Royale is such a weird anomaly to analyze because it's very... It's not early television, but it still is like live TV anthology theater. It's kind of like watching an NBC musical without the musical. Obviously, the most...
Exactly.
So there is some interesting camera work. There's some spinning and stuff that plays off nicely. But the real thing here is the flipping for American audiences. Like Jake brought up earlier, they seem to have condensed the Casino Royale story and they've made James Bond, who is still named James Bond, they call him that twice in the thing, but he prefers Jimmy.
God sends Jimmy Bond.
Because he's an American.
Because Americans are called Jimmy.
God sends Jimmy Bond.
It's the British man who looks more like Ian Fleming's description of Bond than fucking Barry Nelson does.
Yeah, he looks very Hoagy Carmichael. And like Barry
Nelson. Yeah.
And Barry Nelson is like, he's not in a suit that fits him. Like, it's very bizarre. His suit doesn't fit him. He is like, he knows Baccarat because what they decided to focus on was just the Baccarat, which I know is a big part of the book, but oh my God, here it's like the key centerpiece of the episode. And Barry Nelson, like,
well, I mean, it's a centerpiece of the story, but they cut out, it's basically, they shortened the first part of the book, mostly focused on the middle, and then they completely removed the last third of the book.
Yeah. And they merge Vesper Lynd, the main woman character in Casino Royale, with another character in Casino Royale named Mathis.
Valerie Mathis.
Which creates
Janae Mathis.
Which really creates a whole different character from what I understand. Because this is the only...
Yeah. Well, oh, what?
Oh, I was going to say, this is the only piece of Bond media, I think, where he encounters an ex-girlfriend, I think? Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Yeah. Well, actually, in Tomorrow Never Dies, he does.
Ooh.
But we'll get to that later on. And for Rush with Love, technically, like, he meets up with Sylvia Trench in the beginning, so, like...
Oh, yeah, but there's still...
I mean, I guess. They're still dating. They only They only knew each other for, like, an hour and a half, at most, or 15 minutes.
Sylvia Trench and Valerie Mathis are interesting early Bond girls. We'll discuss Sylvia Trench more in depth next episode. But they both kind of represent what you would normally see in like an action movie where it's the stable girlfriend or the ex-girlfriend coming back, not this weird, I keep running into random women and we have a thing and it just keeps like cycling out that has become the James Bond trademark.
I mean, that's always been the trademark in the books even.
Yeah, it's in the books too, but it's just interesting because I think they did this in the adaptations because they felt in order to make it cinematic, the romances needed a sense of history or televisual in this case.
Yeah, definitely.
It's what makes this one kind of interesting because in this adaptation, the main emotional...
Wait, Troy, also, I just needed to ask, did you like it or did you hate it? I'm curious. Like,
I think I had to... It's always hard rating this as compared to the movies. But I gave it 2 stars. I would put it below all but 3 of the official Broccoli movies I've seen so far. And I would say it is not my least favorite version of Casino Royale.
Oh my God, I'm looking forward more so to discussing that Casino Royale than I am of watching it again. But...
Oh God, we have to watch the second Casino Royale again.
You know what I'm gonna do when we watch Casino Royale again? I'm gonna watch my Laserdisc version. just to differentiate, I guess.
Yo, what a fucking hipster.
Oh, wait, what do you think of this Casino Royale? The first Casino Royale?
I think it's a great tutorial on Baccarat.
Well, it's very easy. It's a lot like 21. It's mostly luck, anyway. One player buys the bank. He puts up all the money. Well, everybody plays. One player buys the bank. Partner in the deal. He puts up all the money. Everybody plays. One chance to hold that. It's a part. You go the other cards carry their own stakes. Like I said, it gets the whole day. Lot like 20. Lot like 20. One player buys like a six. His to get a whole nine and all. You go five plays against it. The card is part of a six. Otherwise, it's going to get all over.
That's ingenious.
And as for everything else, it's more of like a deep cut, like, I mean, you can watch it, like, if you have the 60s Casino Royale, it comes as a special feature, and you can watch it that way, or if you want to watch it with the ending, you can go to YouTube, because for some reason they don't have the ending on the DVD that I have, and you have to find that separately, but, no, it's just, like, this weird thing, because it's just, like, it's really off-putting that James Bond is Barry Nelson. He looks like Flash Gordon with darker hair. You know?
He looks like a football player.
Yeah, exactly. He does. He looks like a fucking... he looks like a quarterback. Like that high school, like, quarterback. And it's not that, like, he's bad in the movie. It's just really weird casting. And then you see... did you write down the guy who plays Felix's name? I mean, Clarence. His name is Clarence.
Felix? Clarence in this? I think his name was like Hugo Paré, Hugo Pate. I checked. He hadn't been in anything else interesting I had noticed. But
yeah, Michael Pate. He would have made a much better.
Whose real name Michael was Edward Pate. That's confusing.
Now, why is that? Was there already an Edward Pate or something? Is that a very common name, Pate? Edward Pate, the famous British vaudevillian actor who appeared alongside such classic British talent like Charlie Chaplin.
Chaplin was the original Bond in many ways.
He did all the stunts.
He sold his house to Kermit the Frog, just like James Bond did.
Yeah. How could I forget? I also got to look at my notes because I also like wrote down like a bunch of like weird shit that happened.
One thing
I just wrote down for Barry Nelson. I wrote Shining Guy.
Yes, he was in The Shining. That's his most famous role besides this. Which incidentally, he's on record saying he didn't understand the script to this and he got scared. And I think he said, I wanted out of the mother the minute I stepped on set. So that's kind of impressive. Two other notable Barry Nelson roles I'd like to mention. His first screen debut was in Shadow of the Thin Man, the fourth Thin Man movie. And in my opinion, the best Thin Man movie, which is kind of a glimpse into how franchises used to work, where they would just kind of try to remake the same movie over and over because they weren't being rerun on television. So it's kind of interesting that James Bond.
So this is before the Thin Man television show. Before that, it was he appeared in one of the 5 million Thin Man movies.
There were only six.
Feels like, I don't know. I saw like a box set of like the Thin Man movies and it was like a doorstop. Then again, like if the Thin Man movies are like a doorstop and the Bond movies are like a thing to barricade your door, I don't know.
Another important Barry Nelson film that no one talks about is called The First Traveling Sales Lady. It's a Ginger Rogers comedy where Barry Nelson is a barbed wire salesman who is a rival barbed wire salesman to Ginger Rogers, who is using barbed wire to, she's using barbed wire to sell corsets, but then she tries to sell them to people who want to keep cattle ranchers off their land, so they try to lynch her and Carol Channing. And the only thing that saves them is Clint Eastwood is this young oi toy love interest for Carol Channing. So it's worth watching just to see Clint Eastwood fall head over heels for Carol Channing. Like, very...
Oh, I thought you were just going to say he was falling head over heels for Barry Nelson.
Oh, that'd be hilarious.
That would have been, I would have watched that movie.
As would I, but alas, we got the first traveling sales lady in Casino Royale.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think of, like, Peter Lorre is, like the best casting ever for Lechiffe. Because he's supposed to be, like, a toad man. Ooh. And he pulls that off, and he's, like, the only one who's really... Linda Christian does, like, as much as she could also. But, like, everybody else is just, like, weirdly casted and are just, like, there. but, like, there are moments where, like, Peter Lorre kind of seemed like doesn't hit his, like, mark. Do you remember, like, the part at the end where he gets shot? And it's like, he gets shot, and it's like 3 seconds before, like, he stumbles out. It's almost like they did, like, the shots off screen, like, bang. Peter, that's your line. You gotta fall back. You're dead.
From the beginning of this, episode to the end of the episode, every gun being fired is fired off screen. So, like, the first scene is Barry Nelson awkwardly walking into the Casino Royale, and you see, like, a gun hit a pillar, and then he slowly runs behind the pillar, and the gun keeps hitting the pillar off screen.
And then he just hits the pillar. Even though it's, like, he's, like, bulging out of the way and shit. And you're just like, wow, that guy is, like, if he's trying to hit that pillar, he's doing a very good job at it. Like,
that guy really hates pillars.
Pillar killed his father. Which is why he needs to raise the 80 million francs to pay for the funeral expenses for his father, who was killed by a pillar. It was on the set of 1920s Ben-Hur. Yeah, I mean, there were people who died in the chariot scene. I'd imagine that they weren't even shooting a scene with a pillar. It happened off screen in Sesame the Mill. Just film the aftermath of it. It was...
The 1920s Ben-Hur is the superior Ben-Hur. But that will be covered on our next podcast. Chariots, my father told me. I don't know. anyway. What was I going to say? I haven't read Casino Royale, the book. I've only seen 2 mixed bag films of it. But I... And constantly amazed that.
Wait, are you trying to say that the Daniel Craig Casino Royale is a mixed bag?
I haven't seen the Daniel Craig Casino Royale.
Oh, I thought you were saying that you had only seen 2 films at that point. I'm like, the fuck did you say?
Yeah,
that's like the best.
The 64 one and the 67 one. It's high praise, incidentally, that you say Peter Lorre is the best Lechiffe, because Lechiffe has only otherwise been played by Orson Welles and Mads.
Well, he's not the best Lechiffe, but he's the best casting in that. At least for that time. It's like, I can't think of anything else. I just wish that he was in something better, or like an actual Bond movie, because he does pretty decently. Even though, like, they're the worst villains ever. Because they have like the obvious like bug through the chimney, and then like James Bond is like trying to block out the sound, and then like he's being like all innocuous like as they're listening to the music, but then as soon as he turns down the music, she's like going like, Lechiffe is gonna kill you, Bond, you're an agent of the American Secret Service. And I'm just like, what is happening? Why are you telling him this after he turns down the volume? It doesn't make sense.
Look, one constant pattern in every James Bond thing is that James Bond's a terrible secret agent because everyone knows his name.
Yes, and half the time, but not this bad. But this is, like, insane. I have no idea why they were doing that. Like, it makes no sense. Like, Why would you need to turn it up if you're just going to turn it down whenever, like, Valerie Mathis is going to go like, Jimmy, you are an American agent, and I am your ex-girlfriend, and I work with Lashif now. You can't play in this game. I'm just like, what? Why would you say that when the music's down? Stop. Stop it. Please.
Stop touching my records.
Stop touching my Chopin. I think they're listening to Chopin.
Stop touching my cheap public domain Chopin that the producers can afford. Climax. They gave all their money.
How awkward would it have been if the record didn't work when they were on set? They're just like,
I just think this version of Casino Royale really points out how much this story is just about how two guys' ability at a card game is supposed to define the fate of the free world or something. Because the whole point is that he has to humiliate Lashif enough so that he loses faith.
Well, the whole point is that he's supposed to just make him lose his money so he's more susceptible to giving away who he works for. Which, if they already know that he's guilty, why don't they just freeze his funds? Aren't they? I mean, if he's in France, France, last time I checked, is part of the West.
Is Casino Royale in Monaco?
I don't know where, because in the Daniel Craig one, it's in Montenegro. But in the book, I think it's like, I don't remember. It's like, I thought it was France.
It could be France. I may be misremembering.
I thought it was in France.
Because Monaco is where all the casinos, like, the casinos that people are like, ooh, edgy, were in the 50s. Pre-Grace Kelly, Monaco. But what was I going to say?
Yeah, I mean, it might be, but...
Maybe.
But,
we're never going to get guests on this show if we can't even figure out where Casino Royale is.
Casino Royale. We lost all of our street cred because we don't know where Casino Royale is. I mean, I could just pull out my book or something and like figure it out, but I don't know.
Yeah.
But the main thing is that they kind of cut out the entire heart of the book and the movie, which is basically about, like, it's weird because in the book, he's just supposed to meet Vesper, and Vesper is just like, she's supposed to be like the secretary of the treasury or something like that. Like and she's basically her responsibility is to give Bond money, and Bond is just like, why the fuck is she here? Because he's like a raging sexist in the books, like really bad, like compared to the movies, and. He's just like, what the hell? And then he just kind of falls in love with her. And then, like, the last third of the book is, like, him going, like, I really care about this person. I want to spend the rest of my life with them. And it turns out, spoilers, she kills herself and goes, like, hey, I worked with the bad guys the entire time. And I didn't want you to die. And I felt guilty about, like, everything I've done because they held my boyfriend hostage. And so I played along with their scheme. But then I didn't count to fall in love with you, so I just killed myself. And so Bond, at that point, he says actually kind of a badass. There's a badass passage. I forget what it's. Looking.
I know the final words of the book are pretty. Well, they weren't horribly. They didn't age well at the time either, but
they actually use the final line of the book in the Daniel Craig version. But there's one that's actually kind of like, oh shit. But now he would attack the arm that held the whip and the gun. The business of espionage could be left to white collar boys. They could spy and catch the spies. He would go after the threat behind the spies, the threat that made them spy. Which is kind of badass,
I have to say, as a line.
And you don't really have that. You have, depending on the version that you have, call the police, cut to black.
Come on, call the police.
or get ready for Charlie McCarthy and Edgar Bergen in our next episode of Climax.
Brings you the Broadway smash hit, Glendinier. Our stars next Thursday will be Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, Gene Nelson, Sherry North, and as a special attraction, Mario Lanza.
William Lundigan records a coda to Climax. So in the full episode, it ends with a coda by William Lundigan where he goes,
"Incidentally, ladies and gentlemen, delegates from all over the world are now meeting in Chicago at the 42nd National Safety Congress. We salute the Congress and its accident prevention work. And I'd like to ask each one of you to help too by being careful.
And also, we like to give a shout out to the Safety Congress in Chicago, which is meant to convene a less accident-free, like an accident-free society. So give what you can to support their mission to have less accidents." And I'm like, it may have been necessary at the time. I don't know if the Safety Congress got anything passed.
Yeah, I'm glad it meant something to William Lundigan, I'm sure. But as for people watching in the year of our Lord of 2020, not so much.
Incidentally, speaking of time, we're all over the place, but I wanted to point out that today, June 26, 2020, is Peter Lorre's 114th birthday.
Oh.
Yeah.
Happy birthday. The very first on-screen Bond villain.
Yes. And if you're a listener who isn't familiar with a lot of Peter Lorre's work, he was a great actor. He was considered by maybe even, I don't know if this was Orson Welles or someone else. I should have confirmed this beforehand. But he's considered by many to have been the greatest screen actor of his generation. He started out in M, directed by Fritz Lang, where he played a child murderer. And was given accolades for, you know, being a very sympathetic child murderer, which it's a great movie. I definitely recommend checking him out. And then he came to America, where he did great films like Mad Love, which, Jake, have you seen Mad Love?
I haven't.
You should. It's kind of The Hands of Orlok, where Peter Lorre is a professor who's in love with a scream queen at the Grand Guignol Horror Theater. But she's married to a pianist who I think, if I remember correctly, is Colin Clive, Dr. Frankenstein. And he gets in an accident. So Peter Lorre gives him the hands of a strangler, and the hands have a memory of their own. So they go around strangling people. Oh, no, he's not a strangler. He throws knives. He stabs people with knives. And if you've ever seen the music video Here With Me, for the Killer song that Tim Burton directed, that music video takes a lot of cues from Mad Love. So I highly recommend Mad Love. Of course, I highly recommend his many later roles, including Maltese Falcon, Casablanca, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which he made the same year.
You imbecile! You fool! You are... Sorry.
He also played Zero. Oh, continue. Wait, Jake, what were you going to say?
No, I was just saying, I don't know, hearing Maltese Falcon and Peter Lorre just makes me think of him shouting at Sydney Greenstreet. But
he's very emotional in that film, Joel Cairo. And at about the time he did this, he did, along with 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, he did The Story of Mankind, which also features Harpo Marx as Isaac Newton, Hedy Lamarr as Joan of Arc, Virginia Mayo as Cleopatra. It's a mess. Vincent Price plays Satan and putting humanity on trial with all of its history. It's my favorite So Bad It's Good movie. I recommend you check it out and just look at how bafflingly awful it is.
I actually kind of want to see that.
You should. Unfortunately, Peter Lorre, I believe, actually died in 1961, right as the Connery series.
So he never got to see... Well, no, that...
No, he died in 64.
Oh, 64, so...
Yes.
Yeah, well, he had a great body of work. He's forever known as Booberry now because he's dead.
Oh. Oh, poor Peter Lorre. Happy birthday, though, to Peter Lorre in spirit.
Yes. Happy birthday to Peter Lorre. He's great. And what else is there to, like, because that's the thing that I was, like, worried about, like, with this episode. Because we were discussing whether or not it'd be better to do Casino Royale and Dr. No at the same time, but we decided to do Casino Royale. But it feels like we've gone, like, totally off topic about talking about it, because, like, I don't know, like, is there, like, really anything, like, noteworthy? There's, like, the part where, I guess, like, when he's calling Felix, he's like, "Hey, Felix, are you there?" And then Felix is just like this. "Hi, Bond."
"Hello. Hello, Jimmy."
Everyone's, like, threatening him. That guy with the cane comes, he gets tackled.
That's the first Bond gadget.
Valerie Mathis is so different from Vesper Lynd, as you said earlier. She's like... Because, like, she really does seem to have this history.
No, well, in the beginning, he knows that she's working with Lashif. So that's the big difference right there. There's no betrayal. Well, I guess in the beginning, because he's like, "Huh, we had a thing, and I liked you. And I'm saying this to distract Lashif, but I'm serious at the same time, lady, ma'am, sir." And she's like, "Jimmy, I loved you, but I work for him." And then all of a sudden, the biggest drop is like, she's working with the French Secret Service. And then James Bond's just like, "You're with the French?" And then Peter Lorre was just like, "The French have excellent champagne by Paul."
Yeah, that old torture sequence. I know.
Oh, wait, no, that's
famous for a torture sequence. Is that faithful to what's in this version?
Oh, that's the thing I was going to talk about. Is he gets tortured by, he, like, grabs his toes really hard with a set of pliers, and he's like, "Ah, oh God, please make it stop. Oh God, oh God. He's just going like this with, like, a pair of, like, toy pliers just at his feet. His feet are, like, okay. At the end, he's, like, all bloody. I'm like, when did you get hit? We never saw you get hit. Like, it just went to commercial and then you're on the ground. You could have had, like, a stroke or something like that." And then he's just, like, all bloody and his feet, like, hurt because he got a manicure from Lashif. It's like, "Sorry, my feet are too feminine now. I can't walk now."
He threatens to use the pliers on Valerie Mathis, and I'm like, "What are you gonna do? Pull her teeth? Like, what are you doing?"
"I'm going to take off your jewelry one by one." Like, it's bizarre.
"I'm gonna give her back her old nose." No. Nothing
but that. No. No, or it's like in Robin Hood Men in Tights. The tongue thing. I guess on 1950s television, it was too risque to smash your balls with a carpet beater. I don't know. I think that's pretty solid. I would understand at least why Bond is in pain, because I don't even understand why he's in pain. He's just like, and he's like going like this, like, pinching his toes or something.
I was reading a quote where, like, in the movie, in the book, Lashif says, "All right, Bond, I'm gonna do it like this because this makes you feel like less of a man, even if you get away from me." And it's like, geez, even from the very beginning, Bond is just up scared of losing his masculinity is the running theme of all these stories. Except in this one, where he's scared about losing background.
Oh, yeah, when Barry Nelson forgets to act when he loses all of his money. He's just kind of like this. Like, it's just like, he looks like, freaking, like, just, like, dead-eyed and just like, "I don't really give a shit." And then all of a sudden he gets the money and he's just like, And he doesn't even play it cool. He plays it as if he has, like, no comprehension of what's happening. As if, like, someone gave him, like, Quaaludes before the game. And, like, Peter Lorre's becoming, like, a tree or something in the middle of the room. And he's just like, that's strange. What? And then, because it's just, like, nothing. It's just like, oh, here's what I was going to tell you. I was saving it for this. There is a long-standing rumor that Peter Lorre, when he got shot, that the audience saw him get up and walk off stage. And I think that, like, people thought that this is the case because, like, the whole end was, like, lost for a while. But apparently, that's not true because we have the ending and we watched it. However, this was true for one of the first episodes of Climax, which was an adaption of The Long Goodbye. Did you read about that?
I did read it was on, like, the first episode of Climax, but it is funny imagining it being at The Long Goodbye, because he just shoots him, and then he walks off, yeah, and then the other guy walks.
And he just gets up. Apparently that was, like, on the, like, a bunch of, like, people at home were just like, what the fuck is happening? And it was, like, news at the day that the guy just got up because he just thought the camera cut off of him. And so he just gets up. But I have a feeling it'd be funnier if it was Peter Lorre who did this. He just was like, where's my check? He just got up and left.
I'm trying to see who was in the first episode of The Long Goodbye. Ironically, looking over...
I don't remember, but that was the first adaptation of Long Goodbye.
It should have been.
Yeah, it was.
Climax, the lost episode of... The first lost episode. Tristram Coffin was the actor who stood up and walked off set. The only episode of Climax to ever get an official release on home media is an adaptation of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and Casino Royale. These are the only two that have ever been released.
Yeah.
And I mean...
Well, because they're live, so I can't imagine, like, them keeping, like, all the kinetoscopes or something that they had. I could see them just, like, burning it. Which is unfortunate. I just want to see the Long Goodbye one, just for the guy getting up and walking away.
There's a sheet from what I'm reading here, and he gets up from under the sheet, takes it off, and walks away.
So they just thought he was like a zombie or something? But
done. So he just... Because this stuff does have a lot of spinning camera work, but... So, other interesting notes about the preservation of this episode of Climax, Casino Royale, in case you've forgotten. Apparently, it was shot in color.
I thought we were talking about The Long Goodbye now.
We're over. It's done.
Yeah, no, it was.
This isn't the Philip Marlowe podcast.
The Philip Marlowe podcast. We'll be going through all the Philip Marlowe movies, including Marlowe, Long Goodbye. Long Goodbye is actually really good.
Murder My Sweet.
Robert Altman. The Big Sleep. Both Big Sleeps. The one directed by Michael Winner of Death Wish fame.
Which is set in England. Kind of the opposite of this Casino Royale. It's set in England, but
And the Colonel is played by Jimmy Stewart.
He is. That's on Amazon Prime. I need to watch it.
I tried watching it. It's the most flat, boring thing ever. It basically looks like the Death Wish sequels, because Michael Winner does not know how to direct. He could only do, like, The Mechanic and Death Wish, and those were, like, the only interesting movies he's ever done. Actually, I like Death Wish 3, but not for legit reasons. But anyway, that is another discussion of Death Wish. We're talking about Climax's Casino Royale from the bestseller by... we need to get on track, Troy. This is the James Bond podcast. So far, we've done all we can to not talk about this because there's nothing to talk about because it's boring as fuck.
There is some interesting things about what happened to this episode afterwards, after Bond and Valerie Mathis got together. So they shot this episode in color. It was aired in color, yes. But the kinetoscopes were only in black and white, and they thought they were lost. But then a collector bought this thinking it was the 1967 movie, and he bought two copies. So he had this in his library for years, thinking it was just a copy of the god-awful 1967 version. So he was going through his library and fixing it, and then he goes, oh, it's in black and white. That's weird. I'm just going to watch it to figure out if, like, just for fun, to see David Niven black and white, because you know that's so rare.
What the fuck is this?
And he plays it, and he finds it's Barry Nelson as Jimmy Bond. And he releases it, but it missed the ending.
Picard sends Jimmy Bond. His name is...
Picard sends Jimmy Bond.
It missed the ending, so the version he gave is Peter Lorre, who has been shot in the heart and is bleeding out. Spoilers. He walks over to a couch to talk to James Bond, who can't...
I think we spoiled this in the beginning, but...
About...
he needs the help because his toes look too perfect. His toes are too perfect now. He doesn't want to fuck them up. Because he did... Lachip did a very beautiful job giving him a manicure, and he doesn't want to mess them up.
He did a beautiful job. So Valerie Mathis is helping him to the couch, and they both talk, and Peter Lorre, like, goes... This is the business. You never know who's going to come on top. And like you said, he says, call the...
Oh, no. No, we're both in the same business. We're gamblers.
Be fair, Mr. Bond. It's all in a game. We're both gamblers. And I've lost.
We don't know it's going to win. I'm just like, what the fuck does that line even mean?
And it fades to black on one version. But in the full episode...
No. He goes like, you're missing the... Valerie, call the police. Fade to black. That's the incomplete version.
Come on. Call the police.
The last line, and it's like, it feels like the ending to Los Olvidados. It's bizarre. It's just really downbeat. Except without less children getting dumped into the trash.
Exactly. But then the full ending is Peter Lorre lunging across the table, grabbing Valerie Mathis, trying to drag her to the door, and he's like, Bond, if you shoot her, the bullet may hit me, but if I survive, I won't forget this or something. And then Valerie Mathis just like elbows him, and she moves slightly to the side. And I think Bond shoots him, and he dies.
He opens the door, and she goes like this.
Yeah. Like, at first I thought maybe they were going to try to do the ending of the book and have Bond shoot both of them. But then, no. She's fine. Her and Bond kiss.
No, because she's a French agent that was on his side the entire time, and Lachip just didn't bother to look into the fact that she was an agent the entire time. Because apparently there's a theme even in the books where if you just volunteer your services as an assistant or secretary, that no one really cares. Like in Goldfinger, apparently, like at the point where like the buzzsaw is like about to like kill him, he's like, "Oh, be your assistant," and he's just like, "Okay." That's it. So I have a feeling that it's just like in a long running tradition where. You will be my assistant. Dun, dun, dun! And then, like, they didn't bother to realize that she was an agent or something, because... twist.
There's no such thing as references in the James Bond universe.
There are two references. There is continuity, surprisingly, sometimes.
I mean, like...
Oh, references to what?
Resume.
Oh, yeah. I wonder how Blofeld hired most of the Spectre team.
Oh, I think he's the secret brother of all of them.
He's the author of all of this pain.
I am the writer of all your checks, Agent 571. Anyway.
Yeah, no, that was the... Little did he know that his long-lost brother was on the phone with him when it's like the American announcer voice going like, we will kill Valerie if you win. And then I won. What are you going to do? Oh, well, you have until midnight to give us the money. Wait, I have the girl here. Oh, Goodbye. It's, oh, and oh, there's one thing I needed to talk about, because Felix might be, no, Clarence, who should have been Bond, because he looks like Hoagy Carmichael.
Yeah, he would have been a great Bond.
He has the dimples that look like scars, which is part of the, because Bond's supposed to have a scar on his face, but, anyway, I digress. Felix is the worst. Clarence is the worst spy ever. Like, one, like, when they're, like, doing, like, their covert, like, see, Le Chiffre, he's right there. Let's look at them.
Look, don't look.
And they're, like, looking right at them. And then the waiter is coming over. He's like, well, you see, this is how you play Baccarat. You go Banco, and that means you play against the bank.
He's a fanatic. He's ruthless, incorruptible, and everything he does is entirely legal. But he has a weak spot, and that's how you got into it.
Oh, now you see, the object is
right there. That's it. And so, Baccarat, this is how you play. I'm sorry, I lost my shirt, which is a plant and payoff later on for nothing. Remember?
And make sure you clean him out.
Thanks. Sorry you lost your shirt.
Sorry you lost your shirt. Felix, what's up?
Lighter.
Yes, what is it?
Nothing. It's okay. Sorry I lost your shirt.
Sorry you lost your shirt. Like, you thought that, like, that would be, like, code for, get in my room, I'm being murdered by Le Chiffre, help. But no.
Nah.
It isn't, because it's 50 minutes, and it's live. Who gives a shit? But, anyway, and then Felix does more shit to prove that he's 100% useless, because, like, he goes like, okay, I got the money. Please exchange the check. Keep an eye on Valerie, because the bad guys called me up and said they're going to kill her. And he's like, no problem. I'll make sure she doesn't get away. And then after the game, he goes like, where's Valerie? Oh, she took your winnings. She was part of the bad guy's plot. Why would you do that? Why are you doing this? What? You had one job. Don't lose her. And also, she's in cahoots with the bad guys. Like, what the fuck are you thinking, Clarence? You're the worst. You're the absolute fucking worst. Which is why Barry Nelson should have played. Oh, I'm too mean. I'm Barry Nelson. Even though he just looks like a dough-faced quarterback.
I can't imagine Barry Nelson talking to, like, an M or a money penny. I think this is the only version of Bond with no M. And it's like, I just can't imagine him in, like, a business setting. He barely can tie a tie.
Yeah, no, he looks like a college kid, like, on at a formal or something.
It's, you know? It's a bizarre early take on Bond. Apparently, someone a couple of years later, someone liked it enough that CBS was like, hey, Ian Fleming, write some treatments for a Bond TV show. And the episodes he did, he wrote He wrote into the short stories in For Your Eyes Only. So that's one legacy of this forgotten Casino Royale. Is it best left?
Yeah, because we could have had the adventures of American Agent
God Sense Jimmy Bond.
And we probably wouldn't have, like, any of the future movies to come. No Connery. No more. No Connery again. No Dalton. No Brosnan. No Craig. And this all would have been dead before it was even born.
If James Bond did get popular as an American hero, like Jimmy Bond.
God Sense Jimmy Bond.
Do you think those tropes would still be the same? Like, do you think, like, someone like Valerie Mathis, he would have a girlfriend more throughout? Or, like,
I think he would have, like, a girlfriend more. I don't know, like, it had to have been, I think the only thing about Bond is that, like, he needs to be, like, it's like the total Britishness, because if it started out as American, it'd be like too, at least at that time, it'd be like, he'd be too traditional. And the thing that Bond was appealing was that, like, he was, like, liberated sexually, and he was a cold-blooded murderer, but you still liked him, was, like, the main thing. There was still, like, a likability. Like, Sean Connery was able to make it, basically, he's, like, this anti-hero bastard And he was able to do it in a way where you, like, enjoyed his antics and everything. Which is, like, really, really hard to pull off. Because, like, if you look at the first couple Roger Moore movies, and it, like, totally, like, they're still trying to do Connery. And it's, like, a little, like, because Moore could do his version of Bond, but he can't do the Connery thing, you know?
He's a gentler Bond. I call him the wife guy Bond. Yeah. While Sean Connery is like, an issue of Playboy has come alive and it has a gun, help more of a Bond.
That's exactly what Connery is. But, yeah, Casino Royale. Is there anything more to talk about Casino Royale? I think we covered, like, there was, like, weird gaffes, but, like, I guess, like, we can cover, like, do we spot any, like, live TV gaffes at all? Like, I spotted a couple.
I didn't spot anything. I mean, there's somewhere you can tell people are waiting to pick up cues.
Hello. Hello, Jimmy.
And I did notice Peter Lorre's a great actor.
Yeah.
But, like, the way he's saying his lines, you can tell he's kind of sensitive. It's like, okay, we got to get this in under 50 minutes. And I got to get my lines at an even clip. Like, he doesn't, like, chew on them like he normally would.
Yeah.
I think this episode is officially longer than Casino Royale that we watched today.
Oh, is it? Like, how long?
I don't know when we started. We're going to leave all this in. Don't worry. I know the listeners at home are very interested.
We should do, like, the commentary track of Casino Royale, which is basically us watching in silence. That's because that was like the one worry thing is that I think there's more to talk about with like Dr. No, because you get into like a lot of juicy stuff. Like Casino Royale, it's just very like I'd say check it out if like you're totally interested. Like if you want to like if you're like a huge if you're like already a Bond fan and you haven't seen it, I mean it's really easy to find like. If you have find a copy of Casino Royale, it's on there as a special feature. If you want to see the ending, go to YouTube. Or if you're lazy, the whole thing is on YouTube. So, yeah, just do that. Judge for yourself if you want, like, very gadgetless besides a gun cane, because there is a gun cane.
For a hot second.
And then Clarence uses it to hold an innocent man hostage that goes like, who the fuck are you? Why are you holding a cane to my abdomen? It's a gun. And then the guy's just like, what the fuck are you talking about? Which is more proof of how Clarence Slider is the worst.
I mean, it's pretty clear Climax adapted this because they thought they could just make an episode where everyone plays cards. Was the main reason why they chose to do this. I agree. Mainly check it out. Yeah. Like, if you're the kind of Batman fan who needs to watch the 1940 serials, this is a little below that quality.
Yeah.
But it's the same morbid.
Well, this is shorter because you have to spend at least like 8 to 10 hours watching both of the Batman serials. This is just like 50 minutes and you forget about it as soon as you watch it. Except for like I would actually there was the only thing like I was joking that it's a good Baccarat tutorial, but I would actually watch it repeatedly when I was younger just for the Baccarat tutorial because I wanted to understand what the game is.
I don't know how to play Baccarat or Blackjack. I watched this. I still don't know how to play Baccarat. The pacing, like, was so
dreadful. But he explains it. You got to watch it again. You got to watch it again for Barry Nelson explaining Baccarat. Because who knows when you'll be at a fancy European casino where you need to play Baccarat for the free world because you want to arrest a guy instead of actually freezing his funds or something.
Oh, man, that sounds like the most convoluted way to do a Casino Royale until the next time we watch a Casino Royale. Oh,
surprisingly, yeah, That's going to be 2.5 hours. That was the longest Bond movie at a point. Can't wait. Actually, the 60s Casino Royale has some funny moments. The Casino Royale, I love the Peter O'Toole part.
Yeah, that part.
Peter O'Toole shows up. And then I love the whole torture scene where he's just in like the psychedelic thing and he's in the kilt and he's looking at himself and he just like the help in like the text and he's just like, what the fuck? And he runs into Peter O'Toole and then he gets murdered for no reason.
All right, we'll make sense of the 1967 Casino Royale in the future episode because next episode we'll start with the official series because I don't know if we want to bring this up now, but did making this Casino Royale, was that what separated it from the rights to the other books? Or was that a later deal?
Yes, it did. From what I understand, like, I was looking this up last night. It was like Fleming wanted to, or some guy came up to Fleming and he wanted to adapt Casino Royale. So he sold the rights off for like something like super cheap, like $1,000 or less. And then the option on that, or then I think that guy went to CBS and then CBS came back and then offered him another thing to get the rights. Right? Like, I guess the rights expired with the other guy. I don't know. No, actually, no, because what a book was made in 53. This is made in 54. So maybe if the CBS came back and then offered them like another amount because they were going to do it for the Climax series. And then Ian Fleming was just like, I don't give a shit. And he sold it off basically. He could have sold it for like a lot more than what he did. I think it was like $1,000 or something. And then they made that. And so they had the rights. And then that went to that producer or some producer guy. And then that producer guy died, and so his widow had the rights to it. And then the widow knew a little producer named Charlie K. Feldman. And Charlie K. Feldman was just like, hey, I'll take those rights to Casino Royale. And then Charlie K. Feldman was just like, when Bond was becoming a thing, he's like, hey, I have the rights to the book Casino Royale. I can make my own movie, and we can make it. We're going to do it in the most batshit, insane, worst way possible. But that is for another story. In the meantime, Albert R. Broccoli really wanted to adapt the books, either for film or for television. And he had a producing partner. I don't remember his name.
Saltzman? Harry Saltzman?
No. This is before Saltzman. He had another producing partner, and they had a meeting with Ian Fleming, like in the late 50s, to get the rights because Broccoli really wanted to do it. And his partner, like, basically said these books suck. They're not even good enough for television. Like, sell them at like I think he was trying to like get him to sell them at a cheaper price. And then Fleming was just like, "Fuck you!" And then the meeting ended. And so Broccoli's like, I don't have the rights. And then this carnival performer man, or like, no, why do I think of carnivals when I think of Harry Saltzman? But Harry Saltzman came in and somehow acquired the rights to the books. Saltzman somehow got the rights, and then Albert R. Broccoli broke up with his partner, and then he went up to Harry Saltzman. He's like, I don't want to buy the rights from you. I want to go into partnership because I want to make these movies. At the same time, David Picker at United Artists heard about the Bond books and was just like, oh, these would make great movies. Let's try to get Hitchcock to make it. And then Hitchcock was like, nah. And he made Psycho.
And on Hitchcock's No, we ended up getting Dr. No.
We ended up getting Dr. No, which was supposed to be the easiest book to adapt. And we'll get into our thoughts on the movie. Maybe we'll talk about more behind the scenes shenanigans. Dr. No will be a fun one, more so than Casino Royale. I'm still questioning why we chose this as our first episode. We probably lost all of our our listeners just from like halfway through.
Oh, you guys don't appreciate the Peter Lorre filmography breakdown? You hacks!
Well, that's the only thing we could talk about, because there's nothing to talk about with Casino Royale 1954. It's an episode of a show, and that's it. And there's the more interesting thing is the rumor that Peter Lorre got up from the dead, but that wasn't even in this.
You got an hour and 20 minutes of content out of that.
We talked about it for 70 minutes. Imagine what Dr. No will be like and future episodes will be like. There will be more shenanigans.
So much more shenanigans.
All your favorites will join forces with James Bond to fight Franz Oberhauser as Bond decides he's not a cold-blooded killer. But that is for another time.
It's for another time, another mission. As we try to...
Another mission. And when he learns that what he really needs is to settle down and not murder people. Because that's what the key to James Bond is. To settle down and not murder people.
The secret of James Bond is James Bond should always be quitting. Because I'm tired of James Bond. And he's tired of James Bond. But hopefully you're not tired of us, America. And the world.
Well, we have... What, 26 more movies, including the unofficial ones, to get through?
Are we doing OK Connery?
No, we'll skip that. No, we're going to do we're just going to do anything with James Bond. We're not going to do Operation Kid Brother. We're not going to do Our Man Flint. We're not going to do, maybe we'll do those eventually if we decide to. I tried watching Our Man Flint and I got very bored.
Is Epic Movie a James Bond movie?
No, it's a Charlie and the Chocolate Factory Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
No, Narnia?
Or a Harry Potter movie. In Narnia. I gave Epic Movie like a 5 stars when I was a kid because I didn't know what movies were. And I gave No Country for Old Men like 2. Because I was an idiot.
Epic Movie, I gradually talked myself out of liking after 2 viewings. I felt uncomfortable with it the first time, and then the second time I just was like, no, this is bad. I recognize it's bad now.
I thought it was the funniest movie ever when I was younger because I knew what Fergalicious was.
I know what Superman is. This is like Superman.
And then it's not chocolate, it's poop. And then he eats poop. That was funny. Yeah. So anyway, that was our first episode of our James Bond podcast, where we discussed not a James Bond film, but a television show without James Bond, Jimmy Bond, American agent.
God sends Jimmy Bond.
Jimbo.
Come back to the MI5, Jimmy Bond.
Alrighty. Shall we close off on the episode of Name Not Announced podcast? Okay, wait. What's the name of the podcast? What are we deciding? We got
looking at Beatles Without Earmuffs. License to Listen. No, you only listen twice. Beatles Without Earmuffs. Someone suggested the 007 Club. We've also have Had Your Six.
I'm kind of thinking. You'll only listen twice because I don't think our viewers will actually get to twice of this, but we'll have fun, God damn it, as we go through all of these Bond movies. God damn it. Well, even though you'll only listen twice, we'll keep going.
Listen twice is a stretch goal. We will eventually make an episode. You will be tempted to listen to twice. This is our goal.
This is our goal. This will be the one that you listen to, that you go like, this is a, hopefully you'll listen more than once, but we don't count on it. But I'm glad that you've gotten this far in our first episode of, are we calling it You'll Only Listen Twice officially, or Beatles
Without Earmuffs? We can officially call it that until it decides to move on and make Zardoz, and then we'll change the name for one episode, and then we'll bring it back.
Never say never again. I do want to talk about Zardoz is one of the best thing is one of the best worst movies ever.
I think I like Zardoz more than two of the James Bond movies I've seen. No, I like two James Bond movies more than Zardoz. The rest can get out of here.
I probably like most of the James Bond movies. Actually, there are a couple. There are a couple that I like. Zardoz I like more. And wait until we get into Die Another Day territory. I'm excited for that. But there will be more shenanigans. Hopefully, we'll have special guests on, like other people we know that like these movies. We'll want to watch them with us, and we'll get to talk about them in great detail. Maybe they'll be longer than the movie itself, like this episode, which is longer than the 54-minute Casino Royale. Anyway, that is Troy. Any closing thoughts?
Casino Royale dragged,
and it was only 50 minutes.
What are we giving it? Let's do. Yeah, you said two. So what's your rating again? I know you said it earlier, but
give it 2 shaken martinis out of 5.
I think I gave it 1.5.
I was almost going to give it
1.5 martinis, but I cut it some slack because it was a live TV show.
It's on a different level than the other
stuff we'll be reviewing.
It's worse than any of the Bond
movies I've seen, except for one, but we'll get to that if you listen to our future episode.
Oh, I know which one that is. That'll be an interesting one.
It will be. Uh-oh. If you keep listening, audience.
Keep listening, because it'll be worse than the Beatles without earmuffs.
Worse than the Beatles without earmuffs.
I give it 1.5, 1.5 stars, probably. I don't know. My Letterbox probably says something else. I think it's 1.5. It's boring. Kind of pointless. Only watch it if you're a diehard fan.
So on the official breakdown, we're giving it
1.75 stars as our average rating.
That would appear to be the case, yes. We did it. We're at the end. Troy, do you have anything to plug? Are we gonna plug the shit out of this?
We might. We might end up
plugging it. Right now I'm in the midst of filming a Zoom production, hence why I have this whole green screen set up for Romeo and Juliet through the Inner City Shakespeare Company of Los Angeles. I play Pita, and hopefully that web series will drop soon, and there's other projects going on, and I'll keep everyone posted on them as they develop.
Cool.
Cool. Anything you need to plug, Jake?
Don't follow me on anything. Just maybe join me on Letterboxd. I don't know.
Letterboxd is fun. You should get on Letterboxd.
Unless you work in the industry and might hire us, in which case, don't. I rate current movies on Letterboxd. I don't hold back. I'm sorry. I have to. It's my rule.
I mean, you would think that it'd be okay to review movies. But I guess not. But anyway, yeah, I guess that'll conclude our first episode of
Beatles Without Earmuffs, or Happy Birthday, Peter Lorre, because we'll only record it on Peter Lorre's birthday.
Yeah. And be sure to keep in touch with wherever you listen to this podcast. Hopefully you can subscribe it to whatever podcast thing that you have. If it's on Spotify, I don't even know if it'll be on Spotify right now, or iTunes, or whatever the fuck. Subscribe! And you'll only need to hit the subscribe button once, but you'll need to listen twice.
You won't be satisfied until you've had your 6 listens of an episode.
There you go. All right, this is Jake and Troy.
We're signing off until the next mission.
James Bond will return in Dr. No. There we go. Let's do that. Mission accomplished. Bye.
Goodbye, everyone.